Hello and welcome to On the Couch with M&M. M&M obviously for Maria and Manos.
This is where we go behind the scenes in real estate business ownership to give you great ideas and tips to help you create fun and profitable businesses so that you can live an extraordinary life.
Let's get started.
Welcome back to episode 2 with Mr. Rick Rushton.
So what do you value more in your business?
Well, I value the people.
People,
I
mean, is number one.
Yeah, people same with us. It's always the people. And yeah, so we say at a job interview, if you're coming to work with us, you're going to believe in God.
Yeah. Now,
that's interesting when you say that. But God's an acronym for growth, opportunity, and discipline. They're our values. So if you come and work for us, we're going to grow you, but you've got to help grow us too.
Yeah.
So this is a partnership. So we'll grow you and give you the skills, the training, the systems, the support. But we need your help to grow our business into the sphere that you deal with every day, the people who are in your family, your friends, the schools, the churches, whatever you're doing. So we'll grow you, you've got to grow us. O stands for opportunity. We'll give you opportunity, but you've got to create opportunities for us to grow as well. And then the last one is discipline. So D, so G, growth, O, opportunity, D, discipline. If you can display the first two, but without discipline, it won't happen. No. So if you've got the discipline's doing what you have to do when you have to do it, so you can have
doing the right things at the right time.
You want to have it, not.
I like that acronym.
I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it, and see
if it doesn't happen.
Doesn't work that way. So growth, opportunity, discipline. And Manos and I were talking about it before I got. Like he said, "Oh, sounds like you're here over the phone." I'd rather be a half hour early than 1 minute late. It's a discipline. It's in me now, and I can't. I fly a lot. I get very frustrated when I hear, you know, ladies and gentlemen, captain just bringing one or two late passengers before. I think, why is three people holding up
a whole
300 plan? People? It doesn't make sense to me. So growth, opportunity, and discipline. If you can show us how you've grown in your previous role, if you've shown us how you can create opportunities, give me an example of your discipline, I'll hire you under our culture and values.
Mm.
But if you can't show me any of those things, I don't care what's in your CV.
It's not going to work.
So that's pretty much how we do it.
And one of your disciplines is changing your voicemail every single day.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've never caught you out. In the 10 years that we've known you, Rick, I've never caught you out.
Well, there's a lot of friends who have, I can assure you. And early days they did. And they used to ring me and they'd say, oh, yeah, gotcha.
You got yesterday's message.
And I think if that's where your life is at, well, you've got to ring me to see if I've changed my voicemail message. But yeah, it's like brushing your teeth or like having a shower. Yeah. I don't know any other way of starting my day without doing it. It gets a little bit tricky when you travel a lot. Specifically, you know,
when you're in a different zone.
Yeah, like Perth with daylight savings is a challenge because it's 3 hours behind. But I'm often, you know, in North America, and so you're the day behind. So you've really got to be on your game and making sure that you're changing it pretty well. But I found that created business for me. So, you know, if a potential vendor rang and said, hi, I just want to see if you can come out and give us an effort. By the way, impressive voicemail message. And then when I'd see them, it had already pre-framed me because I'd talk to them. They go, do you change your voicemail message every day? I go, yeah. Well, I'm assuming if you're looking for an agent, you're looking for an agent with discipline, would that be a fit? And they go, oh, absolutely. If I can't display it in a voicemail message, what hope do I have of displaying it, you know, in your campaign? And they would, I wouldn't say I got the business just because of that, but it was certainly a key.
It's one of those 1%ers, isn't it? The 1%ers all add up to 100%.
Yeah, it's all those little things that you do. Well, it's not one big thing, but lots of little things. So I think, you know, the future of real estate is realistically adding value to the consumer and showing them in a disciplined way how you can bring something extra to the transaction. Because ultimately, you know, I think consumers know the price of everything but the value of nothing.
Yeah.
So they've got to see that there's a value exchange if they hire me as opposed to one of my competitors.
And do you believe that value has to be displayed well before they've chosen the agent?
Oh, it goes without saying. I get frustrated how we're doing it. I mean, the biggest value exchange I'm seeing at the moment from agents broadcasting out there to trying to attract new business is to say, we got 150 grand above reserve. Do you know, I've spoken to consumers who know nothing about auctions properly.
Mm.
And I go, what do you see when you see that? They go, well, lucky they went to auction, because if they went private treaty, that agency would have cost them 150 grand. We think that's inside out marketing and broadcasting of value propositions that the consumer doesn't even get.
Yeah, look, I have a term for it, Rick. It's called agents believe they're legends in their own mind.
Yeah,
they really do at times. And what the message that they're broadcasting, is it really providing value for the consumer to look at them as value add and saying, yeah, I'm going to select this this person, not because of their ego, but because they've actually done a great job for their 100% from the customer service point of view.
And it drives us too, Matt. It's like we, at our opens, we used to just hand out all the usual paraphernalia about, you know, how good we are and here's our personal brochure and lots of stuff. And then we just got rid of all that. And we said, you know, we would ask them the same dialogue. You know, we've been doing it now for 20 years. So what's attracted you to this property? What are you researching today? Is it buying or selling? We would find when you ask that question, some would say they're buying, some would say they're selling. Many more from about 2008 on in our market were saying we're actually researching the area.
Yeah.
Because now with EastLink, now with CityLink, now with these road systems, we've got our work position here and we're drawing a circle, 35-minute commute from the Mornington Peninsula to Bayswater, our cameraman.
Yes.
There's no way Sam would have thought about that 15 years ago, but he can now.
Yeah.
So we started producing value-added stuff at Opens along the lines of, here's the five schools in this area, here's the NAPLAN testing, here's the bursar's details, give them a call if you want to do a private tour, please tell them you're a client or a potential client of our company.
Mm.
I'd hand that out to buyers at an open. The next person in the queue is a potential seller researching the agent they want to sell with later in the year. And I go, what are you researching today? Is it buying or selling? And they go, we're researching you. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Come and chat to us. So the value proposition's much bigger than just pre-listing kits. It's about data and information and how we're, we are being road tested even though we don't think
100%.
We are.
100%. And it's always been the case, especially with open for inspections. If someone is looking to sell in a particular area, they will. They will come and visit you. I think we're on show on Saturday. We all know that.
Yeah.
If you don't know that, that's, yeah.
If I was starting out again now, that's the first thing I'd be jumping into. I'd be going to an office where there's listings that are sitting there, no one's opening them. I'd go, why aren't we
open for inspections.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
And open them twice a week.
I would open them Wednesday.
I remember your good friend, Bob Wolf.
Oh, yeah. Every day, wasn't it?
What was
for
what,
how many
what,
hours?
What was his, he goes, if you want to get some listings.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit lucky because I get to speak to him pretty regularly, but and at the moment he's actually coaching our son who's working for him at the moment. And it's interesting when he says your son's doing great, you know, he was in the office at 7 a.m. this morning and he was still there at 7 p.m. at night. I'm going, gee, I couldn't get him out of bed at 7, even if he'd known it was 7 o'clock
excited,
in the day.
Yeah.
But he said if I had another 10 like him it'd be good. And I said, what specifically is he doing, Bob? He goes, look, I'll tell you what he's doing, he's just there. You don't have to be good so much, it's just there. And he's there and he's, you know, opening properties for me. And so, you know, what Wolf did when he went to a new market, didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
He opened every other agent's listings in his office that didn't want to open them. He opened them every day. So they weren't his listings, but people would come, buyers. So he met buyers. But what he found was he'd find a seller or two, maybe not for the immediate market, but maybe a week from now, a month from now, a year from now. And he just kept on doing that.
Kept in touch, built relationships. So,
yeah. I mean,
he started later on as well, didn't he?
He did, but he started, unfortunately, what he did, unfortunately, he got into something, showed a lot of promise early as a salesperson, bought into a business that went bankrupt.
Right. Oh,
so then he had to bail out. And come back again from a long way out. But what he learned second time around, it cost him a lot. You know, his first wife left him, and he says no sense of humour. I would have thought she probably just, was struggling with the concept of where they're at.
Very tough.
And so from that standpoint. But so I learned that discipline of changing my voicemail message every day from him in 97. So he was the first speaker at the first ARIC convention that ever was, at the ANA Hotel in 1997. And at the end of his talk, 90 minutes, everyone got up and walked out. There were those that were on the teen diet, right? Caffeine, nicotine, wanted to get out. I just waited for him to finish, took off his microphone, gathered all these things. I just shook his hand and said, thank you.
Yeah.
Changed my life. Anytime you're in my town, he said, come and see me.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, I was in his town. I was at a hotel. He said, what's the hotel like? I said, well, I think it's okay. I'm not here for the hotel. I'm here to hang out with you. I'm here to go do appointments with you. And he said, I've got a better hotel for you. Pack everything up. And he came and grabbed me and took me behind this gated community. And he's explaining who these famous people are in these houses. And then he said, Bob Wolf, famous realtor, lives here. And I go, what am I doing? He says, oh, you're in the Rick Rushton Memorial Guest Suite.
Oh.
So I lived with him for 10 days. Changed my career, changed my life, really. Yeah. And now I chuckle because our soon-to-be 25-year-old son
is there with him at
the moment doing the whole thing. And I know that had a massive impact on my life, my career. So
great opportunity to see that.
But I don't want him to go to Wolfie for relationship stuff, but I do want him to go to Wolfie for business. And discipline. He's the most disciplined real estate agent I've seen. 64 years of age, more energy than most. incredibly disciplined, changes his voicemail message every day. Mm. You know, he starts his day very, very early. When he's on the game, he's on the game. He's not thinking he should be talking to his son, Dustin, although Dustin, his son, and he speak more. And I like you and Costa and George. You, like,
yeah.
You with your kids.
Close family, yeah.
Very close, but he just doesn't mix the two. When he's in business, he's in business. And when he's with his family, and like, he's just got back from, he took his partner to Paris for a week. When he's doing that, he's not thinking, now let me get back to the
deal.
It's
such an important discipline to learn, and it's so difficult as business leaders. And so a lot of people struggle with that, though, don't they? So
well, you asked me earlier, how did I release all that? Yeah. See, I'm not the best anything anymore in our team. I might be still the best auctioneer, I don't know, but I'm not the best any, and I don't want to be.
Ultimately. Yes.
It's great when you can actually make yourself almost redundant.
Yeah.
But I think what has to happen is you do need someone to give you the tap on the shoulder and say, hey, remember, what's this all about? So you've got to have a good partner in the game of life and a big why. But I think you also have to have a belief at some stage that it's pretty exciting to help the next generation through.
That's what drives us.
Yeah,
we love it.
Yeah, you know, I'm where I am because a lot of people showed a lot of support, love, and faith in me long before I could see it myself.
Yeah.
And so
that's paying
almost
it forward.
Like, yeah, and paying it forward. And it's almost like the baton's being passed. And I remember used to think, yeah, it'd be good to be, you know, one of my mentors was a guy called Jim Rohn. What an amazing life he had. Mm. And, you know, the wise old head. And I said, you know, I'd love to be in that position like you, sir, you know, being the wise old head. He spoke 2 weeks up to before he passed away. I think he knew he was passing away, but he was the smile on his face because he was still speaking and sharing and had the wisdom and had the knowledge and that sort of stuff. So that helps me to sort of think that's my position,
yeah.
Not just in my team, but I think it's my obligation back to the greater
to society.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think that I'm that arrogant that I could think I could do that, but I offer that up, and if it comes, it comes. Yeah. And, you know, and
whoever, like, you don't know, you never know who's going to be the next person that you're going to help by actually putting out there all that knowledge and,
What about mistakes? Where do you see some leaders going really wrong? We've talked about culture. Yeah. We've talked about people and leverage. We've talked about having that balance. We've talked about the discipline and being true to yourself and having your core values. But where do you see some of the real mistakes and some leaders come into business and where they fail?
I think, to me, it's all about their mindset. It's not about a good mindset. It's like a growth mindset. And so what I mean by good mindset, sometimes I get in the business going, now I'm going to compare my business to, if I'm in this group, I'm going to look at JC's, or I'm going to look at Claudio's, or I'm going to look at someone's business, and I'm going to go, now that's where they are, but I'm not. So I'll pitch myself here and then do the slow burn, or worse, they go, I will now try and get to that level ahead of schedule. I don't think any good business operator is going to go great from in 2022, 5 years from now. I think you've got to have a growth mindset with your business. So the worst thing you can do is compare yourself to other
businesses.
I think what you got to do is you just got to go, am I better 3 months in than I was at the beginning? Yeah. Am I better 12 months in than I was in the beginning? What's the lessons I can learn? So make mistakes. You've got to be unafraid to lose. You've got to be unafraid to make a mistake. So winners are unafraid to make a mistake because they don't even call it a mistake. They reframe that. They call that it's a learning experience.
It's a learning experience.
So long as I haven't busted my mortality, I can actually recover and be okay. So I think you got to get rid of the good mindset, because I think everyone gets into business with good intent. Good's no longer good enough. And I think that's the wrong model anyway. I think what you got to get in is with a growth model. So we're at ground zero. We're building something. Foundations are strong. Got a good brand behind us. Got good people that we can rely on. We can do all these things. And now we've got to go, right, the clock's running. So let's have a look. We'll check in with ourselves a month from now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, too. And all they've got to be committed, how can I get a little bit better? Because if they're given the opportunity, I think as kids we're taught to compete against the smartest kid in the class. And that's probably going to be restrictive.
Yeah.
I think what we've got to say is, what's your PB and how can you continue to do your PB?
Yourself, yeah.
And that's why I love a lot of your business themes, you know, like, you know, PB 16 as an example. There's no surprise that so many of your team had a massive personal best because
we did.
That was the focus.
One of them.
Every 100% of the offices, 87% of the team. So when we talk about themes, we talk about for our theme for 2017 is Impact 2017. Last year was personal best 2016.
Yeah.
And what did they have to do to achieve that? And it's the power of the word, the power of intention actually drives
it out there
that.
Sometimes, isn't it?
So a lot of when I took over the business that I was in, we had a goal to write a certain amount of numbers, never been written in our market, never been done before. And we titled that The Best Is Yet to Come. So it was just an old philosophical personal development phrase. But I'll tell you, when the best is yet
to come. If it connects with you and with your team, that's that.
So if you measure that against the culture stuff we talked about earlier, so when someone says something to hi, thanks for calling our company, can you just wait a moment? Because they're under stress. You can grab them and go, just by the way, just help me to understand when you broadcast that to the consumer, what part of that was going to help us grow? Oh, but I was under the pump. Yeah, get it. So with discipline, what you could have said is put your hand up, hey, I'm under the pump. Can someone help me on reception? And then we have a learning experience now.
Yes.
Get it. So that person's now. So I think as we've got to those values because of all the mistakes we made. And so if you can learn from the mistakes, then you've got a learning experience. But I don't think you call them mistakes. You just go opportunities to grow.
Exactly.
They're opportunities to get a little bit better. But you need... That's why you need those core values, because if you don't have those core values, how can you reward people? How can you keep people accountable? And more importantly, how can you educate them? When I heard you say that, what part of that was growth for us?
Yeah, what part of that was
when I heard you say that to that person? When I saw you come into the 8 o'clock meeting at 8:05 with a cuppa in your hand, on the phone, showing no... What you're broadcasting is that your time's more valuable than six other people's time that are waiting in this meeting to start.
Yeah.
What part of this? Just help me to understand. Oh, sorry, I was caught up. I was a deal. It was an important deal. It's going to be worth 20 grand to us. Well, that's the money aspect. Got that. But help me to understand this aspect. Can I give you some feedback? Here's what I got. It got no problems at all. Now, if we didn't have discipline as one of our values, I could just say, "What are you doing today late?" Well, I was making money. Isn't money what we're doing here?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not clear and if we're not defined on what this business is all about, we have no way of...
Because every business owner is faced with that challenge, that you have people just looking at the time management aspect who aren't that respectful to their fellow colleagues, always arriving late. Mm-hmm. So it's important as a business owner to identify that, make sure it's part of your values, and make sure you address it straight away.
Well, unfortunately, those people tend to be the biggest writers too. So the principle feels a little bit hamstrung if I... get rid of Jack. Well, geez, there goes $1.5 million of turnover out the door.
Mm.
But what I found over the journey, the number one in our company when I bought the company was for less than 3 months because the culture was going in a different direction. He didn't like it.
The culture pushed.
But what happened was the next tier came up, covered him pretty quickly. You know, there's some horror stories too where people have gone, I'm going to follow the Rick Rushton model of let's get the pillars right, let's get the people right, let's leverage our business. I got rid of some big producers who weren't great adding to the culture and we went bankrupt. So there's no one size fits all here. But I think, you know, I gave that big performer every chance. I sat him in a room like this and said, you know, we're taking this in a different direction. I don't expect you to absolutely love and embrace it, but I want you
to at least respect.
You have to be in our camp raving fan, but you've got to be neutral and you can never be negative. Never. Not every now and then. Never.
Never.
And if we understand that, we don't have a problem, do we?
Yeah.
But if I see you being negative against anything we're trying to do here, that's when we're going to have a problem. So it was 3 months in and I'm having, when would we want this conversation to end? Neutral, that's all I'm asking, or to the side of positive, but never to the negative. And I said, well, I'm going to give you the chance to think about this over the weekend. And he's come back on the Monday and gone, yeah, I think you're right. I'm probably, but I'm just letting you know, I'm probably going to open up an opposition. And I said, no, I'd expect that because competition is awesome. And all it did was it drove the next tier through to want to prove that this person probably
we've seen that happen in our business.
In our business where you have, for a better term, called gorillas, they leave and then people that were in the shadows come up.
We've seen it happen over and over again.
Every time that we haven't had that many times, but the few occasions it's happened, our business is always... You take a little step back, but it just flies thereafter in every department, whether it's in property management, whether it's in sales.
Because it filters through. That negative energy filters through. So you need to get rid of it.
And I found not just in our business, but I get the great fortune of going into elite operations, whether they be professional sports or whatever. And that's the way every industry is going. If you're not on that tram, you may as well just...
You're missing it.
Yeah, just don't wait for anyone else to sack yourself and go do something else. Because if you can't develop a business that's on strong values, good culture... And obviously giving people the leverage to grow themselves and then grow you, P&L, I don't have any optimism for you in 20... Because there's a lot of great brands that were great 20 years ago that are struggling right now. Yeah. There's a lot of iconic brands that are in all sorts of trouble at the minute. And how can that possibly happen? I'll tell you how that happened. They were stuck in the old ways versus the new reality of what is happening now. We've got, in this tech age, it's everything's like 15 minutes ago. You know, so you've got to continue to look to
It's like
to
the grow. Kodak story, isn't it? With some of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're just used to that and they're just not willing to change and embrace change.
Yet if there's anything we know about the industry right now, over the last, if I think about this, in 2007, there were no apps in the App Store. 2007.
Yeah.
From 2008 to the present day, there's 4.5 million.
Yeah.
And of those, there's 5% that are around finance, real estate, or thereabouts. That must tell us something about having keep ahead of the curve. Yeah. So,
Great. Awesome. And before we go to our fast five.
Fast five.
Anything you'd like to any last message to the viewers in regards to business ownership and any advice for where you see what's happening?
Oh, I think, you know, for me, I can't imagine growing up in Australia and not wanting to have a go in the game of life as a business owner. Like, why would you not? Like, they're not building rafts to get the Bosnia, and they're not building rafts. Why do we have a border protection problem? Because people want the same opportunities we've got to come to a country where water's clean.
Pretty good, aren't we? Yeah.
Opportunities are amazing. And, you know, our kids, when they travel, come back and go, geez, Dad, yeah, wow. You know, I've just spent, it's a great experience. Place. I just think, you know, there's never been a better time in recorded history to get into business than right now. Money's easy to get. People are out there. You've just got good to be
people.
Able to
great people
and
get
good
there.
People. And if you can build those things we talked about throughout this interview, people will come to you. And why wouldn't you have a go at doing something like that? And build something that outlasts you. Your DNA is on it forever. And, you know, so that's probably... I'm really worried about this
have
fast
go.
Five.
Have a go. No, it's not...
I'm competitive, but
it's nothing.
I don't know what fast five
it's,
means.
It's really nothing to worry about, okay. I promise.
All right.
I think this you've already answered Maria. The first one.
The first one. We'll repeat it, though.
Yes. So the first question, as a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a professional sports person.
That's right. Any, but...
In any particular sport? Field?
I was pretty okay at soccer, and I had opportunities to go overseas to play, but I was a mama's boy and wouldn't have left my mum no matter how much opportunities and possibilities were out there. So leaving home at 15 to go to the continent, Europe, was not in my thinking at the time. So I wanted the opportunity, but I didn't want to pay the price.
You didn't want to leave home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Name an achievement that you're most proud of.
Well, I'd be with my wife for 34 years this year. I mean, everything else is a distant second after that, but that's easily the best.
The
and
best.
If you saw her, well, you know her. So,
yes.
And if she leaves me, I'm going with her. So it's all under control.
I love it. Okay. You can never get rid of him. No, sorry.
She knows her.
So
what is the next item on your bucket list?
Well, I've just written a book. So, and that was something it's been a 20-year goal, and I wrote it between Christmas, New Year's in 2016 and finished it on Valentine's Day. So that's with the publisher at the moment, and we're just finalising all of that. So that was my next big thing. And so what I found I was doing was when I wrote one book, I ended up writing three because I'd be writing stuff that I thought, hang on, that belongs in a different thing. So so what's the immediate project? It's the book.
Finalising that book,
yeah.
Which is a question here. If your life was a book, what would the title be?
Well, I'd like to think the title would be "The Best Is Yet to Come."
Yes,
because I'm always looking for. But the title that I love is "The Power of Connection." I mean, we're together because of the connection. We were at a football game at a president's dinner. I didn't know you. You didn't know
That's
me.
Right.
And
yeah.
We connected,
yeah.
And so, you know, my whole life, I'm just one of the luckiest sons of guns that ever walked the earth because I've got so many friendships that are just connections.
Yeah.
So the power of connection would be probably it.
Yes.
If someone's going to play me, Tom Cruise. No,
if your life
was a movie, Leo,
Leonardo DiCaprio, 100%.
Yeah,
I think he'll be all right. And who do you admire most in the industry, and why? I've missed one.
Who do I admire most in the industry? Wow, that's a big one. Gee, I don't know if I admire any. I've got a lot of respect for thought leaders in the industry. And so, but their names you'd know and then there'd be names you wouldn't know. Like, I've got a lot of respect for a guy like Joe Walton, who's our current REIV president. And that might be a out of left field one. But, you know, this is a guy who's a husband, a father, running a business that was founded in 1800 and something in Collins Street. He's doing an MBA. He's he's giving back to the Institute. He's very passionate about bringing through the next group of real estate agents. I admire him dramatically. I admire John McGrath, and John and I have had this battle going for the last two decades about service versus skills, as we talked about earlier. He's talking about, service is key. I'm saying, well, skills is really where the value's at. And so, but I admire the ability where I can have that debate with him, and
that conversation.
And I still think I get a free ticket to Eric. So I admire him. There's way too many people to sort of list here in this interview, but suffice to say, my admiration is long for a lot of people, and I'm, some of the things that they're doing. That's why I get pained when I hear bad real estate stories, because it's kind of, there's so many good people in real estate.
And it's an amazing industry.
There's iconic leaders that we can mention, or there's people like Joe Walton who, even holds a really high profile office, but most people don't even know who he is. But so I'm really fortunate to say that I admire those people.
Yeah. Awesome.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Okay, as well.
Thank you. And the feeling is mutual.
Rick, really loved it. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you, everyone, for watching the latest episode. Please leave your comments below. We'd love to hear your feedback. And we'll
see you. And any questions as well.
And any questions, of course. See you on the other side.